94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge,
your hometown voice.
And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
Listen to that all day, but I'm a little biased. That was the drummer from the rock band Rush, Neil Peart, and he unfortunately died today. The news came out today, Neil Peart dead at 67, and, you know, for Rogue Talk, not sure that everybody cares about that, but I do, and it's my show, so I had to listen to a little bit of that, and share that the sad news as someone who's a terrible drummer. I'm gonna admit it right now, terrible drummer, but I love it. I had a drum set for years. My uncle was a drummer, and I idolized him for years, and he gave me some lessons, and he would tell you I was the worst student ever in the history of drum students. But I enjoyed it, and Neil Peart was, and I don't even know if I say his name properly. There's a big argument all the time on how to say his name properly, but nonetheless, really one of the greatest drummers of all time. You know, maybe John Bonham, a completely different type of drummer. The drummer for Led Zeppelin was just one of the all-time greats. But technically, Neil Peart is really unchallenged in rock music. There may be some other drummers out there that are as accomplished as he is technically and with what he's done. But when it comes to the rock and roll drummers, I put him on top. And so I wanted to touch on that. I hadn't planned on doing that. I just saw the news just about an hour before I came on the air. By the way, I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for January 10th, 2020. And that's right, we're in 2020 now. And little side note on that, I got in a little trouble with my wife the other day because she was misunderstanding a point I was making, and she thought it was a personal attack on her, and I didn't mean it that way at all. She was cautioning our son, as we've seen around the news and whatnot, about the year 2020. When you write a date, especially on you know, some sort of legal document, you know, whether it's a check or a contract or any kind of thing that you might sign your name to and you date it, she was letting him know that you should write out the 2020, because if you just put -20, somebody could change that to, you know, 2022 or 2019 or whatever. Like in the case of a check, if they made it 2022, it's a post-dated check and it wouldn't be a good check. Although post-dating is illegal as well. In fact, altering any kind of legal document, including a check, is a federal crime. So there's a whole lot that went into this. But what I was seeing, and again, her warning to my son was perfectly legitimate, and I probably should have made that more clear at the beginning of our conversation, you know, her and I and our son. But what was happening that day is all over the news on Good Morning America at our house and on a bunch of other news sources. They were stressing this, you know, oh, don't just put -20 and, you know, it could be a problem. And again, not that it's bad advice, but it was almost hyped, not quite to the point of Y2K, but it was starting to feel that way. And I'm thinking, to what end is someone going to risk a federal crime to alter the date on something? I mean, most of us don't deal with legal documents that often. I mean, you buy a car, you have to sign a few papers, and you know, in most cases, if you're in a dealership and you're buying a new or a used car and you're signing a bunch of paperwork, you can be reasonably sure that the people there are not going to try and defraud you in any way, but it's a good idea to protect yourself in that instance. And if you're signing some real estate papers, something along those lines, you know, always a good idea to write out the whole date and not, you know, and some forms, they make you do that. In fact, on online forms often now make you write out the whole date. And if your month, if the birth month is a single digit, like September is 9, they make you put 09. Not that you could change 9 to anything else, but you could change 2 to 12 or something along those lines. So they make you, a lot of online forms, they make you do that anyhow. But it was being hyped, and again, I was thinking, to what end? If I wrote a check to somebody, they want to cash that check. They want that money right now. There would be no benefit to them to alter the date in some sort of way, because any way they altered it, well, A, they would be committing a federal crime by altering a legal document, in this case, a check. But anything they changed it to would make the check no good. Checks are only good, I believe, for 6 months, and shame on me for not being positive about that. My wife works in banking, but I believe they're only good for 6 months. And if you post-dated it, that's a whole nother issue. It's illegal to post-date a check, but a post-dated check, a bank personnel would look at that. They can't cash that check for you. They would generally give it back to you and say, you know, you can't cash this right now. If this is a mistake, you'll need to go back to the person that wrote it and have them fix it. And as somebody in a small business, I receive some post-dated checks on occasion. I don't get too excited about it because usually they might mail it a week before it's due or a week before the first of the month, which is, you know, technically when it's due, even though we give a grace period in our business, they'll post-date it to the first. Again, it's not legal to do that. However, I'm not going to get excited about it. It's not owed to me until the first, so I'm fine with that. But there's no, in your normal day-to-day life, about the only thing you date of any significance on a day-to-day basis, and most people don't even do this because we don't use checks anymore, would be writing a check. And there's not really, the only way someone could change a check, it would be a malicious activity. But there's nothing that they could do that makes it beneficial to them. So I found the whole thing kind of weird. I mean, again, it wasn't something to complain about. But we always have these things, you know, the first of the year, there's always some new thing. And the other thing I pointed out to one friend that had kind of shared something about, you know, oh, be careful about dating things with just 20. And I'm like, you realize that the whole entire last year, the same thing applied. If someone wanted to date something that you wrote -19, they could have wrote 85 and completely changed, you know, the date on that thing. So, and nobody said a word a year ago. I didn't hear anybody at the beginning of 2019 say, you know, be careful about writing -19. Someone could change that to 1999 or whatever. Perfectly legitimate. I mean, you could do it in 18, 17 too, but at least with 19, you know, it's very possible that someone could have a check laying around that was dated in the 20th century, the 1900s. That's not that far back, so that's still possible. So again, I found the whole thing kind of stupid, but and I've already talked about it longer than it was worth, but I found it kind of fun. It's the first show I've done this year, and I found that kind of interesting. So let's move on to some other news, and I jotted down a couple of news stories that I found interesting. A recent story came out that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned a lower court injunction, which now clears the way for the Trump administration to use $3.6 billion of military construction funds to build the border wall. Now, I'll be right up front. I'm somewhat ambivalent about whether or not we build the border wall. Essentially, the current immigration policy has put up somewhat of a border wall, not a physical wall, but at least a wall that has slowed down the amount of migration into or trying to get into the country. That doesn't mean we don't have people still coming across the border. We do. But most notably, the policy that asylum seekers, and again, most asylum seekers do not get asylum. Their claims are turned down. The vast majority do not get, but they do get their day in court. They do get they get it looked at to see if they're legitimately someone that can seek asylum. But the ones that are coming up from the south are being held in Mexico instead of being allowed to come across the border. And that's a big change from years past. And all of a sudden, now that that policy's in place, we're not hearing all of these stories about these big groups of migrants coming up from South America through Mexico. You know, that was the big news story for months and months, and the media was showing pictures from 2014 of kids in cages and blaming it on the president, when those pictures actually came from the Obama administration or the Obama years. And I don't blame Obama for that. That's not my point. The policies are what the law says they have to do. If a court gives an order, until another court changes that order, they have to follow that, or until maybe the Congress passes a law that clarifies it. So even under the Obama administration, when those pictures were actually taken, they were following the law. Now, they were making some of their own laws related to immigration, but in the instance of illegals coming across the border, whether they were seeking asylum or just trying to get into America, they were following a court order. And in fact, it was what was considered to be a liberal court at the time. It was the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that had given that court order. So again, I don't blame Obama for that any more than I blame Trump for what was going on. But what crisis there was on the border, I wouldn't say it's 100% averted. It's not 100% gone by any stretch of the imagination, but things have improved drastically. And so you have to give Trump a little bit of credit for that, because it's at least in some part due to his policy on asylum seekers. And he took a lot of grief for that. And I'm sure that most of the Democrats still disagree with that, but you can't argue with the results. Again, the idea of the ends justify the means is not always a healthy way, but in fact, the law supports what he did. Asylum, you're supposed to seek asylum in the first country that can provide it. I'm sure the wording is different, but that's how you're supposed to do it. And Mexico qualifies, so they really should be seeking asylum in Mexico. We're allowing them to still seek asylum here, but we're making them stay in Mexico, and it's definitely had a positive effect on the border. So now getting back to the news story I started with, the $3.6 billion that the Trump administration wanted to use to start constructing new border wall. They're now cleared to do it. It may go to the Supreme Court, but right now the Court of Appeals has given them the green light. Another story, interesting story that happened this past week is the Covington Catholic student Nicholas Sandman has settled a $275 million lawsuit against CNN. The amount of the settlement was not disclosed, but the lawsuit was basically because Mr. Sandman was smeared by CNN. He was a student that was on a trip to the March for Life, and the media took really didn't even take video. I mean, there was video, but they took a still shot of Nicholas Sandman, who happened to be wearing a MAGA hat. I'm trying to remember. I don't have all of the original details from the original story. I believe that he bought the MAGA hat on the trip as sort of a, you know, you go to Disneyland, you buy a Star Wars hat or whatever. I don't mean that quite so dismissively. Obviously, he's a supporter of the president. But, you know, it was something he had just bought on the trip, I believe. And it, not that it matters, but I'm just trying to clarify a little bit. And was wearing the hat, and the still shot, because it was a kid in a MAGA hat, and the media has, you know, level 6 Trump derangement syndrome, along with the entire Democrat Party. They took this still shot, and he had a grin on his face, and he was standing with a Native American man that had been there, because apparently on that same day as the March for Life, there was also an Indigenous People's March. And so he's pictured. And so, of course, the narrative they painted was that, you know, he was disrespecting this Native American man and what a horrible thing to do. And his friends were doing terrible things. Well, as it turns out, what really had happened was this group of students was waiting for their bus or waiting for their transportation, and a group known as the Black Hebrew Israelites, which is can only be described as a hate group. They're anti-Semitic. They're often involved in protests where they're, you know, may or may not be within their constitutional rights, but they're definitely, they get out of hand. They attack people, not necessarily always physically, but definitely verbally. And they were going after these students verbally. And then the Native American gentleman started pounding his drum right next to the face and the head of Mr. Sandman, and he was trying to deal with it the best way he can. Some of the other students were yelling some things and doing what high school students do. I don't know if you've ever encountered a busload of athletes at a McDonald's on their way home from a sports trip, but they can be a little boisterous and a little out of control. You know, not criminal, not even, you know, violent or anything like that, but they're having a good time. They're acting the way high school kids act. So I'm not saying that the kids were perfect, but what Mr. Sandman did was just stand there and try and be respectful. He wasn't doing anything wrong. Again, neither were his classmates. I mean, some of them were probably, you know, behaving in a manner that they may have been reprimanded for, just like, you know, happens occasionally on a school trip, you know, whether it's sports or a field trip or whatever. But, and, you know, the proof is in the pudding. The CNN was forced to settle the lawsuit, and his lawyers plan more lawsuits. In fact, 54 individuals, including some celebrities, were sent a letter instructing them to preserve evidence for a potential lawsuit. And, you know, some of the celebrities were speaking out against him without knowing the facts, as all of the news agencies did. And so there's definitely going to be more to come from this. We're going to hear more about it. And so that, you know, good news for the truth, really, because that whole story just got blown out of proportion, and it was nothing but a slanderous lie against this young man and some of his classmates. So I'm happy to see that the lawsuits are starting to bear some fruit. So, and let's cover one more story, then we'll go to break, and I've got a few more. Probably the main story we're going to try and get to is about the homeless situation in the Valley, more specifically along the Greenway and in Medford. And I've got a lot to say about that, but let's see if we can cover one more story here. Let's quickly, actually, we'll just hit a couple of quick points here. I won't talk as much about these other ones. We're still waiting for the impeachment. The House has done their voting, and they voted to impeach the president on two. What are they now? The terminology is escaping me, but it doesn't really matter. The impeachment is a farce because neither one of the articles, the articles of impeachment are actual crimes under what we would consider high crimes and misdemeanors. In fact, the one count, there's no evidence to back up, and the other one is not a crime at all. So it's really very weak, and because they know it's weak, Nancy Pelosi is sitting on it, and I'm not sure what the long game is right now. Maybe she wants to sit on it all the way until after the election and try and impeach Trump after he's reelected. I don't think that's going to work legally. I don't even think that's possible. But the Senate's already said they've already passed a rule change that if she doesn't give them the articles within 25 days, they will vote to dismiss the case. So they're on to her little games. And so at some point, probably, I would guess as early as next week, she will turn them over. I'm so tired of hearing this stuff about the House managers and, you know, the House has a role in this. Read the Constitution. The House has no role in this. The House has their role, which is the impeachment. House managers is part of House rules that the House makes up. The Senate has their own rules that they make up. None of those rules are in the Constitution. Those are all rules that they make up. The filibuster is not in the Constitution. That's why they're able to change it at will, as both parties have done in the recent past. Those are all rules within the body. They are not constitutional rules. The Constitution is actually very simple and very clear on impeachment. And the Senate has the sole responsibility to conduct the trial. The House has no say in that. So if I hear one more time about the House managers and all of that, I think I'm going to hurl, because it's stupid and ridiculous. And it's just Nancy Pelosi biding her time, trying to figure out what her best next move is. So crazy stuff as far as I'm concerned. Another story. I'm not going to go into any of the details of this. I thought about running a little clip of this, but then when I heard that Neil Peart had died, I'd rather play a little bit of drumming than another clip from this. But go on the internet, go on YouTube, and find the full 8 minutes of Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes this past week. It's worth your time. He wrecks Hollywood, and it was glorious. Got a little rough. There's a little bit of language that's bleeped out, but he went after them. And for anybody said that, oh, this is just a show, and, you know, he said at the beginning, these are just jokes, you're not paying attention to the last 5 years of Ricky Gervais. This was not an act. He went after them with a vengeance. And he's absolutely right. Everything he said is spot on right. So do yourself a favor. Look that up from this year's Golden Globes. It was classic. And quickly, just one little note again, some audio I thought about playing. We're not going to play it, but we're hearing all of this, you know, how the killing of General Soleimani at the airport in Iraq. Of course, he was a terrorist leader, an Iranian general. And we're hearing all of these people saying, oh, you needed to go through Congress, and, you know, which is baloney. We even have, you know, Senator Mike Lee wants to change the War Powers Act. I'm all for changing the War Powers Act, by the way. I don't necessarily agree with Mike Lee's take on the changes. But again, we're hearing a lot of that, but at least when it comes to the Democrats, they're all full of it. And the audio that I was going to play, but I'm not going to waste your time on it, was back in 2011 when, don't forget, the Obama administration didn't just take out a general that was a terrorist general. They deposed the leader of Libya and killed him. Muammar Gaddafi was chased out of the palace. He was in hiding, trying to run the country in hiding, and they hunted him down, they tortured him, and they killed him. And when all of that was going on, Nancy Pelosi was asked if President Obama needed to go to Congress. I mean, we had a full-on war in Libya. We joined their civil war, and we killed the leader of their country. And she was asked if they needed to go to Congress for that, and she said no. So, again, as we see in government all the time, a whole lot of political showmanship and not a whole lot of just being sticking to the truth and the facts and being genuine people. So it's disgusting, and it happens on both sides. It just happens to be on the side of the Democrats at the moment. And don't forget, the disaster in Libya not only led to Benghazi and four Americans killed in our embassy, and the Obama administration getting there about 4 days late. And so when the same thing happened again, this time in Baghdad, President Trump responded quickly, protected our embassy, and then took out the person that orchestrated the attack. So big difference in the way those two were handled, and therefore a big difference in the way those things ended. And don't forget, ISIS came out of the void left in Libya by killing Gaddafi, who really had a president gone and killed Gaddafi back in the 90s, I would have been all for that. He was really somewhat the equivalent of Soleimani today, except out of Libya. But really, he had become somewhat of an ally, or at least an uninterested party in that region. We had kind of neutered him, and he wasn't really a problem, but the Obama administration felt the need to go get him. And again, I'm not going to lose any sleep over the death of a terrorist, but the way things played out, quite a bit different this time around, and fortunately for our country in this case, it definitely played out in a more positive fashion. So I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about homelessness in the Rogue Valley. So we will be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says the state will reject the resettlement of new refugees, becoming the first state known to do so under a recent Trump administration order. In a letter released Friday, the governor wrote that Texas, quote, has been left by Congress to deal with disproportionate migration issues resulting from a broken federal immigration system, unquote. He added that Texas, which typically takes in thousands of refugees each year, has done more than its share. Governors in 42 other states have said they will consent to allowing in more refugees, that according to the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. On Wall Street, the Dow down by 133 points. The NASDAQ dropped 25, the S&P lower by 9. Crude oil down 52 cents to $59.04 a barrel. This is SRN News.
Broadcasting to Rogue River, Gold Hill, Weimer, and beyond. 94.3, The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. We're going to start in the NBA, where the 76ers pull out a win over the Celtics yesterday to inch closer to the Atlantic Division lead.
The 76ers rallied in the fourth quarter, taking a 109-98 win over the Celtics. Philadelphia in the final quarter down by three when they took the lead for good on a 7-2 run, capped by a three-point basket by Furkan Korkmaz. Up by four late, the Sixers sealed the win with a 7-0 run, closed up by a jumper by Al Horford that pushed the lead to 11. Josh Richardson had a game-high 29. Ben Simmons added 19. Kemba Walker had 26 for Boston. Michael Luongo, Philadelphia.
Elsewhere is Cleveland over Detroit, 115-112 in overtime. Minnesota got the better of Portland, 116-102. OKC stopped Houston, 113-92. AP Top 25 College Basketball, number one Gonzaga over San Diego, 94-50. This is SRN Sports. Look at more college hoop scores here. Eighth-ranked Michigan State over Minnesota, 74-58. Number 9, Oregon beat number 24, Arizona, narrowly, 74-73. 19th-ranked Michigan over Purdue, 84-78. Number 23, Wichita State down number 21, Memphis, 76-67. In the National Hockey League yesterday, Boston 5, Jets 4. It was Florida over the Canucks, 5-2. Oilers 4. Canadiens 2. The Rangers beat the Devils by a 6-3 score. Tampa Bay shut out Arizona 4-0. Blues 5. Sabres 1. Nashville beat Chicago by a 5-2 score. It was Calgary over Minnesota 2-1. Dallas blanked Anaheim 3-0. It was LA 5. Vegas 2. And the Sharks over Columbus 3-1. Baseball, the White Sox and slugger Edward Encarnacion finalized their one-year $12 million contract. This is SRN Sports.
Was a little more of a Neil Peart drum solo from the David Letterman show back in 2011. And again, the great drummer for the rock group Rush, dead today at 67. And so I mentioned before the break, I wanted to talk a little bit about the homelessness situation in our valley, and I've talked about this before, but there's another one of the Greenway sweeps that happened in the Medford Central Point area, happening actually yesterday and today, and so I took this from some of these details from KDRV.com. So the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, along with several other agencies, they started another sweep of the homeless camps along the Bear Creek Greenway. And for several weeks prior to yesterday and today's sweep, notices were given out to individuals along the Greenway, warning them that the sweep was coming and, you know, what would happen if they were there. Because of those warnings, only one person was arrested, and he was arrested for outstanding warrants. And so that part of it, I guess, is good, I suppose. I would prefer they didn't give as much notice. most of these people are frequent flyers, so to speak. They'll be right back there along the greenway once the sweep is done. And I would prefer that more of these people got the help that they need. If you go in and warn them that you're coming, they're going to leave. And I'm actually going to get to why that's a bad thing in another respect. We'll get to that a little bit later. But you lose the chance to find maybe more people that were wanted on previous warrants or failure to appear or any number of reasons. So I'm not sure I agree with the tactic of not of warning them well in advance. You know, one of the things they did with the people they did find, if they weren't, you know, wanted for anything, is they gave them information on programs that are available to help them. And so everything about not telling them you're coming, or at least not giving them several weeks' notice, almost all the outcomes would be good outcomes. And instead, we choose to do it the way we do it. Again, they have their reasons, and there are some negative outcomes from not giving them, you know, long notice. But I think the benefits outweigh the problems. But again, I'm not in favor of putting any law enforcement at risk. And so if this helps keep our law enforcement officials safe, if that's the reason behind it and the facts back that up, I'm happy that they do it the way they do. And that's not really the focus of what I want to talk about here, but it is an interesting part of it. So as part of the sweep, there's also, of course, a cleanup. They clean up debris and garbage, and that cleanup is continuing today. I believe the sweep is basically done, but the cleanup takes a lot longer. They're expecting to take more than 200 yards of garbage out of the greenway. And for those of you in Wolf Creek, that means more than four of those giant dumpsters that you see on construction sites. So this is a lot of debris. And so it's a messy thing. I mean, you've probably all driven into Medford, you know, on occasion, and there's certain parts of the freeway, especially if you're going to the south end, there's parts of the freeway you'll see along the way, and you can see down into Bear Creek. You can see all of the tarps and garbage and all that, you know, mess. And you can see, I mean, any number of things. And occasionally you see, you know, some of these transients or whatever, however you'd like to describe them. And it's a disgusting thing on a lot of levels. It's, first of all, it's not a safe environment, safe place for those people to be. And again, their situations are all different, but it's not the best situation for them. It's definitely not the best situation for the average citizen who might want to access the greenway. I know here in Rogue River, we have our section of the greenway, and we've had some problems. I don't know that we've had as much with the homeless, although I'm sure there's been some of that. But we've had some other problems along the greenway, and it's unfortunate because it seems like a neat thing to have. It seems like a nice idea, a way to enjoy the riparian areas and all that kind of thing. But unfortunately, it also becomes a attractive place for the not only the homeless, but it becomes an attractive place for criminal activity. Again, the issues we've had more close to home here in Rogue River have been, you know, attacks and things that have happened. People on their bikes have been attacked or, you know, assaulted. And it, so the greenway is a whole another subject. I'm not even going to talk about that much today, but I mean, it's created a whole new set of problems along with, again, giving us some benefits as well. So anyhow, they're in there cleaning all of this garbage out, and the you know, another thing to think about, these crews have to take extra special precautions because some of the things they're having to clean up are scores of used needles, hypodermic needles, that clearly we know what those are being used for, and you don't know the health conditions. I mean, never mind the drugs that were in those hypodermic needles. You don't know the health conditions of the people that are injecting themselves with those needles. If you come into contact with this, it can be a real problem. You could get AIDS. You could get hepatitis. I mean, there's all kinds of things to worry about coming in contact with those needles, never mind the drugs that are in them. And some of the drugs can be tainted. We've had some warnings in the last couple of weeks about certain drugs, you know, that were tainted and having some really negative side effects. Not that doing drugs in general don't have negative side effects, but then when they're tainted, it's a whole nother issue. And that's a big part of my passion about this issue, is because I've had to deal with this stuff too, and I'll get to that in a minute. Let's go into that a little bit. Let's kind of move this to what my experience is and why this story, while I'm in favor of cleaning up the Greenway, I'm actually in favor of being a better help to the homeless than you know, it's a fine line between doing what's right for the community and still being a service to people, that many of these people need some help. Some of them live that way by choice in a way. I've talked to some of these people, and I'll get to that. But I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but part of my job, I work for a landowner in the Medford area, and I have the task of cleaning up a handful of properties along Riverside in Medford. Of course, I mean Riverside Avenue, but it also is along part of the Greenway. And but more than being along the Greenway, the downtown area becomes the next go-to for these people that get chased out of the Greenway. And I've seen a lot of these same issues that we're talking about with this sweep and cleanup that's going on. While my normal duties would be to maintain the lawns, the trees, and the shrubs, that's become almost secondary at these properties to me cleaning up after the homeless. They routinely sleep on the property. They know that, especially the certain businesses that I work at, that nobody's there on the weekend. So the weekends are especially bad. I've gone there on Saturdays to do, a lot easier for me to get my work done on a Saturday, for the same reason it's easier for them to sleep there on a Saturday, because no one's there on Saturday and Sunday. And so they know that there's no one's going to ask them to move. No one's going to bother them. And I've been at one particular property that on a given Saturday morning, there were five homeless people sleeping on this one fairly narrow office building property. And I don't want to deal with that. It's way above my pay grade. I don't mind cleaning up, although it's not my favorite thing to do. But I'm not going to go wake up a homeless guy because I don't know his situation. Not only do I not want to be taking his things, even though he's trespassing, but some of these people are severely mentally ill. I've encountered individuals that were just plain incoherent and crazy, whether they were drugged out or their mental illness was so bad. But they were scary, and I don't want to deal with those people. I'm not paid to again, way above my pay grade, but I've encountered some of the same things. I've had to clean up needles. I've had to clean up human feces. I've had it goes on and on and on. And I guess the point that I'm trying to make about this is when they do the sweep of the greenway, all they do is chase these people into the downtown. And I see it. Every time one of these greenway sweeps happen, you can tell not only when the notices go out, but for the period from when the notices go out until they actually do the sweep, the amount of people that start showing up on the properties I work at goes up dramatically. And I've seen it time and time again. So my question to these agencies, to the Medford Police, to the Jackson County sheriffs, again, I'm not taking anything away from what they are doing. My problem is what they aren't doing. What are you doing for the business owners that are putting up with this, and they're getting inundated every time you sweep that greenway? The downtown businesses are inundated, and you're not doing anything about it. And I've had talks with the business owners that I work for there. It's a real problem. I'm only there once a week. They've got to deal with it every day. And, you know, and I've been accused, and I'm running out of time because I've got some Chieftain sports stuff I want to get to in the final segment. So I want to save enough time for that. But I'll make one last note about this is, I've been accused of, oh, you don't have compassion for these people. You know, you're just worried about your customer or your this and that. And that couldn't be further from the truth. As I already said, when those people are actually there on the property, when I'm not just cleaning up after them, I have compassion for them. I've talked to many of them. And I told one in particular guy, I says, look, I've been asked to come and clean things up, and I don't want to take your things. I go, because when they're there and you're not there, to me, they're just garbage I have to clean up. I go, but I know those are that's your property that you want. Don't leave it here, please. And the guy's like, no, I won't. I he was a super nice guy, but they're not all that way, and I don't want to have to deal with them. And the landowner shouldn't have to deal with them. And again, that it's not getting, we're not getting into any of the ways that we could better serve those people that are, you know, either down on their luck or they're drug addicted or they're, you know, their mental illness. There's a lot of things we could be doing better. But my point is these greenway sweeps are important, but what are you doing next? And right now it seems like they're not doing a whole lot next. So I'd love to talk on that more, but I want to save some time. We've got all kinds of Chieftain news from the high school. So we're going to take another break and we'll come back and wrap things up.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. The Bridge.
That's our news. I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says the state will reject the resettlement of new refugees, becoming the first state known to do so under a recent Trump administration order. In a letter released Friday, the governor wrote that Texas, quote, has been left by Congress to deal with disproportionate migration issues resulting from a broken federal immigration system, unquote. He added that Texas, which typically takes in thousands of refugees each year, has done more than its share. Governors in 42 other states have said they will consent to allowing in more refugees, that according to the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. On Wall Street, the Dow down by 133 points, the NASDAQ dropped 25, the S&P lower by 9, crude oil down 52 cents to $59.04 a barrel. This is SRN News.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And as I said right before the break, I got a lot of Chieftain sports and other things going on at the high school I wanted to get to, so let's get to that so I don't run out of time. First off, the FFA beef feed is coming up on February 1st, and I don't have any of the details in front of me at the moment, but the best way you can find out all the details, well, first of all, you can contact the high school find out how you can get tickets. And it's a great event. I went last year. I don't think I'm going to get to go this year. I originally had intended to sponsor a table and to go, but I don't believe I'm going to make it. But on January 24th, right here on Rogue Talk, we've got my favorite guests coming back. And when I say my favorite, it's not specific kids, although sometimes it is. I always love having the FFA in here. We always have them in here once or twice throughout the school year. And they are going to come in on the 24th to promote the Beef Feed, their biggest fundraiser of the year. And this thing is phenomenal. They'll have a legitimate real life auctioneer there. They're going to auction off a bunch of items. I tried to get some golf clubs last year. I got outbid, which is, I'm happy to be outbid because that means the FFA got more money out of that. But it's a fun night. There's silent auction. There's live auction. The food is amazing. We've got at least the last time I checked into this, we have the fourth largest FFA program in the state of Oregon. We are a tiny school. There are much, much bigger schools and much, bigger agricultural areas where you would expect FFA to be so much bigger. And we are the fourth largest in membership numbers, or at least, again, we were when I kind of checked on that last year around this time. So we've got an FFA program to be super proud of, and I will have them right here on January 24th, so don't miss it. It's always a good show when they come in. So let's get to the sports. Wrestling, last Saturday in a 14-team tournament at Eagle Point, our Rogue River Chieftains were 7th overall, and that was a tournament that included 6A powerhouse North Medford, who won the tournament. And we finished 7th, so it was a great showing for the Chieftains. In individual results, Gabe Tambellini was first at 195. Rosie Feiss was second at 155. Danny Herrinks was third at 285. Tony Isom was fourth at 138. Jeffrey Ouellette was fifth at 138. And Grant Fehrenbacher was sixth at 160. And the JV, Ethan Baird, was first at 132. Chris Ost was sixth at 138. James Long was first at 145. And Gage Taylor was fourth at 132. And the wrestlers have a big tournament this weekend at Rogue River High School. Get out there and support them. Even if you're a basketball fan, you need to get out and support the wrestling team this weekend, because there ain't no basketball this weekend, and we're going to get to that right now. Well, first of all, there were games scheduled for tonight that were played last night. Unbeknownst to me, apparently it came down on Tuesday that they were moving those games to Thursday, but we here at 94.3 The Bridge were not notified, and unfortunately that means we weren't able to broadcast last night's games that were, again, scheduled originally for tonight. The reason they moved them to last night was to give more time to set up for the wrestling tournament. If you've ever been to a wrestling tournament, you know, with the mats and the concessions and all of that, it's quite an undertaking. So anyhow, the results from that, the girls won their conference opener over Butte Falls 50-27. And the boys unfortunately lost 63-31. So the girls are now 1-0 in the conference, boys 0-1. And the reason there's no basketball this weekend is because not only were the games scheduled for tonight moved to last night, but tomorrow's games that were supposed to be played in Lakeview have been canceled and rescheduled. They've been moved to January 28th. Tentatively, we may try and hook up with the radio station in Lakeview for that coverage. Depends on the game times right now, so we'll keep you up to date on that. Otherwise, they'll be back in action next Friday, first game at 6:30 when they host Glide. So everybody be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.